Marcus, you are the presenter of this show because you're the best young anchor in the country.
Thank you. I'm the best old one too. It's the football ramble.
Carry on rambling, apparently.
I'm joined by the pretty Pete.
Hey, what's going on?
The effervescent James is here.
Hi.
And the twinkly eyed Luke.
All right.
Oh, gentlemen, what is your favourite volley of all time? Inspired by an email from one of our wonderful listeners.
An email from Mark Dunford. Mm. Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, cheers. Yeah.
I'm going to jump straight in, and I'm going to go with a Zidane volley from the Champions League final. Because that's the Champions League final,
that's
you know. That's
one,
an amazing
against
time
Leverkusen,
to pull that out. That's right, yeah. That's amazing time to pull that out of the top drawer.
With his weaker foot, James.
Yes.
The technique was impeccable.
Yeah, phenomenal.
Absolutely impeccable.
And the timing was great, because it was in a final.
You can't, for me, you can't look much past Van Basten's effort in Euro 88 against the USSR, as they were then, I think.
That was,
Russia,
yeah.
In the
yeah,
final.
Yeah.
That was ridiculous.
Yeah.
That was from an impossible angle. The keeper just sort of went, looked over his head and just went, shit!
Nah!
Yeah.
Nah!
Oh, sorry about that. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. You couldn't believe it.
And the defender said, well, don't apologise.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. The defender didn't get tight to Van Basten, I'll tell you what. I'd have mopped that up.
It was... only Andre Kanchelskis for Rangers against Dunfermline has come close to that.
I've not seen that one.
Oh, it's a good one.
Was it, yeah?
But that's not my one. But before we come to that, Pete...
Well, yeah, I'm always Newcastle-related in some way, and I see no reason to stop David Ginola, Ferenc Varos, so...
Oh, yeah. I thought you were going to say Alan Shearer versus Everton.
Yeah,
the one that Sholam Iobi claimed as big. People don't think that I set up goals, but I headed that goal to Alan
Shearer.
He had a bit to do from that, Sholam, I think.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Well, that leaves me with two. You've got the Rooney one against Newcastle.
Oh,
that was magnificent.
Which was magnificent, beautiful. But I'm going to go for the one that all volleys are compared to, and it's Tony Ebo versus Liverpool.
That was off the crossbar. Yeah, that was fantastic.
Tell you what, for all the and I'm sure we're going to talk about it a bit in a minute, but for all the stick we give him, John Terry scored an all right volley from the edge of the area recently.
Yeah, but it doesn't deserve to be.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, give him credit where it's due.
Don't just say.
Okay,
right?
Sorry.
anyway, talking of John Terry, he scored the winner for England.
He did.
Yeah. You can't deny that.
Thank me for that link. Eh? Set you up there, didn't I? I'm showing Rami Obi. He's on his back. Hang on a minute. I'm not happy with that.
Yeah, you're not on the coaching staff.
No, yeah.
Or on the playing staff, probably.
No, exactly, yeah. I expect Newcastle are welcoming back one of the greatest strikers this country's ever produced, and Alan Shearer.
Hey, put a
an Ian Dowie-related joke for you there. Yeah. Sorry about that. What are you saying, John Terry? Winner.
England, Ukraine.
Yeah.
Got the job done.
Mm.
End of.
It marks a very sort of different kind of team that they can actually do that. They'd have fluffed that under McLaren, you know. Mm. Even under Ericsson. I mean, this is like a classic point where England would slip up and make it difficult for themselves to qualify. Mm. They would qualify, but it would still be really tense and really tedious and boring. Yeah. But like, they've got the win and they're flying. It's brilliant. Mm. Really pleased for Ireland as well, getting a point against Italy. It looked like they'd slipped up.
That cost me £118.
Even better.
Yeah,
I had 1 minute away from an 8-game accumulator.
You never win on the accumulators.
It's not all about me, James. Yeah. You know? It's about football.
We reiterate this constantly, yeah. Luke, and I'm glad that you're finally getting the message.
Pennies dropped.
There's money on the floor.
Pick it up, then.
I was going to say... I think Jimbo's right. I think that...
Seldom is he wrong.
It's nice... For the England team to go out in front of 80,000 people who are in a good mood to watch a game of football and knock the ball around nicely, go a goal up. As soon as you do sort of concede that goal, that's when Capello and the England players have to really earn their reputation, earn their stripes. And I think they did that. And I think the biggest difference for me, a little bit more of what Jimbo said, was that when it was a goal they conceded, they were under Ericsson or McLaren, they would have done one of two things. Either would have tried really hard to force it, and it would have just they would have ended up conceding on the break or something, and got pissed off.
Well,
that's
what I said to you when we were watching. I said, now we're probably going to force it too much and leave ourselves open, but we never.
Either that, or we would have panicked, and McLaren would have chucked three subs on.
Well, McLaren, we wouldn't have had a plan B. It would have been.
But Capello would be Stuart Downing.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Capello has instilled that confidence in the players. Yes. Just play your game. I didn't genuinely see much difference when it was 1-1 from when they went first one to goal up. They still seemed like they knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
The only thing they were guilty of was probably half an hour from when the second half kicked off of being a little bit complacent and sort of knocking it about a little bit too much, being a little bit careless and acting maybe like they were 2 or 3 up when they weren't really. But if anything, that's overconfidence, which is great. You know, you just got to be careful. That's all.
Actually, a mate of mine went to the Slovakia game, and he was sat right by the dugout, and so he got quite an insight into what actually happens. And apparently, Stuart Pearce is really, really involved. Peter Crouch, when he got up to get on, he just got up normally and started taking his tracksuit off. And apparently, Capello, he wasn't even starting. He went, "No, no, get on, you hurry up!" And like, he's really, really on their backs constantly. So it has to be immaculate standards at all time.
He probably punched the air when they won.
You
rarely get to see that with.
Because Lampard was saying that under McLaren, right? He didn't even used to check who was in the squad. He said he was easy just to go. He said, "I'll get my text through and I'll just go." He wouldn't even be interested who else was in the squad, you know what I mean? But I think they obviously those times have changed now. But I mean, just on the qualifying group. And Slovakia, to be fair, had a great result against Czech Republic yesterday.
Oh, they did, 1-2-1 in the
away, in a derby.
Yeah, they were really, really poor against England. I saw that game on a broken TV, so the pitch was blue. It was like they were playing it in fucking Tron.
Yeah, but I was going to say that in terms of the group, the next couple of games they've got is away to Kazakhstan and at home to Andorra. I mean, I don't think it's complacent to say that's probably 6 points. So
That's a long way to qualify. If
that's
you get
21 points.
Well, Belarus won 5-1 in Kazakhstan.
Yeah.
I mean, you should be
Kazakhstan were a goal up as well. They're not a terrible side.
They're not a terrible side.
Belarus aren't a terrible side.
There's no easy games in international football anymore.
No, there isn't. You're quite right.
No, there aren't.
wrong.
Zinger, that was a zinger. Wait, I'll tell you something. Who's having real trouble qualifying? That's Portugal. Have you seen that?
No.
They're fourth in their group.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And they've got a tough one as well.
That's Kiros, isn't it, in charge?
Yeah, so he'll be back to Man United again. All right, Uncle Alex, I failed again. Come on, son, come in.
Yeah.
Your mum will put your dinner on.
Yeah. But you're not getting my job when it gets
exactly,
double grabs,
yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
I made that abundantly clear. I thought the biggest surprise of yesterday's qualifying came from South America.
Yeah.
All the way up in La Paz. Which is the unofficial capital of Bolivia.
3,500 metres above sea level, Marcus, if I'm not mistaken.
And I've been there, Luke, so I can vouch for that.
Testify.
But I'm actually genuinely interested, because you're probably the only person I know who's been there. Is it really hard to breathe just walking around up there? Do you notice it just walking around?
Yeah, you do. If you walk up, like, for example, the part of the city we were staying at, it was quite, you know, like San Francisco is a bit up and down, a bit hilly and stuff. It was a bit like that. And like, you'd really notice it when you're walking around.
The reason I asked that is because I read...
Still scored a hat-trick.
Did you really? Did you really?
No. I didn't play. No. Didn't try.
Well, because the reason, it's a genuine question, because I read that Maradona, who obviously isn't in the best of shape, but he's in much better shape than he was before.
His stomach was stapled.
Apparently he was struggling for breath. I keep stopping in the press conference afterwards.
But he played in a charity match not that long ago up in...
Yeah, that was the irony, wasn't it? He was campaigning for them to keep games in the past. And then his own team have had their asses handed to them.
Yeah. 6-1.
Yeah.
Just phenomenal.
The Argentinian defending, and this is going to be a downfall under Maradona if they don't sort it out. Their defending against Bolivia last night was absolutely comical.
Yeah. Abysmal.
It wasn't even funny. It was it would come to an Argentine defender, like Zanetti or something. He would go to clear it. Mm. He would mess up the clearance. It would go to another Argentine defender who'd mess it up.
Yeah.
And then the next Argentinian player would get in a 50-50. Mm. It would break. The keeper would dive and the goal would just slot it in.
Yeah.
And that happened about 4 times.
Definitely. I mean, you can have 4 top-class defenders, but if they don't know what they're doing in relation to each other, then they're screwed.
I don't even think they've got 4 top-quality defenders. No, that's their problem. They're really struggling at the back. I don't think Maradona knows what to do at the back. Mm. He played 3 at the back in the last fixture, didn't he?
Yeah,
and obviously they won that game, but the goal, even Argentina's goal,
it was flattering. It was abysmal goalkeeping.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, terrible. Yeah, it bounced about 3 times before it got to him.
Yeah, from about 50 yards out.
But that's their biggest defeat in 60 years.
Well, yeah, it's a 6-1 thumping, though, isn't it? I mean, teams like Argentina just don't lose it to that amount.
But you know, again, we talked about it enough times with the levelling off of international football, and again, it's another little... Yeah, it's just another result that's come up, and you just think, bloody hell, it's all kicking off.
Yeah, I mean...
All kicking off.
It's a different one, because I get the feeling that the the South American qualification group, especially Brazil, they tend to put like players. They don't always. I mean, I know they did.
Well, they don't always play the best players.
No,
do they?
I know they have called some players back
it's
this time around.
It's far
round,
more like
always...
a league, isn't it? That group.
Yeah.
Well, they know each other because they play each other. It's always the same. Top four go through. The fifth place team has a playoff. The fifth place team is always. You can check the records. This is definitely true. Every single qualification process, the fifth place team has always been Uruguay.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
Every single time it's Uruguay, and they're always fifth. And that's just basically... They're basically
Australia knocked them out on penalties.
They did, yeah.
Yeah, when they made it through.
They're fifth at the moment.
Yeah. Paraguay are doing well. I think they're top.
They are, they're flying.
Let's bring it back home. Oh, Peter. Alan Shearer.
Let's go north.
Alan Shearer.
Newcastle United Hello. Comedy Club. Can you get us on the guest list, Pete?
Well, you're pleased about that, Pete?
It's just a bit of a difficult one. It's not a great situation either way, is it, really?
Get the monk off your back. Get him in.
What? Yeah. Exactly. Just you know, I've given him his 8 games. Give him his 15 minutes. But no, he should have. You know what I mean? Why wasn't he offered the job after Keegan left?
He's got 8 games, isn't he? He's basically bulletproofed against any criticism.
That's why he
goes down.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
so he's done that, you know,
8 games.
He's done that before. He's done that when he played. You know, it just kind of smacks of him just sort of going, well, can't really lose here, can I?
Well, it's,
yeah, but Pete, you sound a little bit reticent today, if you don't mind me saying, because when it actually happened, right, my phone rang, and do you know something? This is absolutely 100% true. My phone was on silent, but the only reason I answered it is because it vibrated off my chest of drawers onto me, and it woke me up, and it was Pete ringing. And I thought to myself, God, Pete never rings.
At what time was this?
At exactly 4:15 a.m. Right? And I thought, Pete never rings. He never answered the phone when I ring him. There must be something terrible happened. We've been done for live or something like that. And it can't wait.
Why would I know?
Like Marcus said, Marcus said, I bet you thought he was ringing to say Peter Kenyon's come around and the attack helicopter to kill you. Get out of the house now. Like. And then, it was Pete. I answered it. All right, Pete, how you doing? Load of unintelligible, like, Geordie vernacular down the phone before just hanging up. And that was at 4:15.
But not unintelligent. That.
And then I got a text at exactly 4:19 a.m. saying, I am instantly sorry.
Yeah, I got a bit drunk. I came back and was expecting. I was just logging on, seeing what was going on and stuff. And I discovered that news. Woke up and I was as drunk as a lord. And I just wanted to. I just wanted to let somebody know because
I love it how you had to let somebody know. That's the thing.
I'm pleased it was real. I'm touched.
I wanted somebody to show. Well, it was a few other people as well, to be honest.
No, leave it there. That's you rung me. That's the fact.
But yeah. I like to think you were outside the stadium with your Newcastle shirt on, which of course everybody else.
I maintain.
All your Newcastle shirt off.
Yeah. But it was worse waking up still drunk at 10 a.m. and going, oh, it's fucking April Fool's Day. They wouldn't.
Yeah. That's why I take you back. Is it April Fool's?
Yeah.
But I maintain those people you find outside, and it's normally either Anfield, the City of Manchester Stadium, or St James's Park. Those kids who knock about outside when things are happening, they must be Sky Sports employees.
Oh, they just they take the piss. I can't stand them.
There was one I saw on Sky Sports the other day when it all happened, and he was outside, right? And he's going, oh, this is one of those days where you're going to remember where you were. Sorry, are you comparing this to when JFK was shot and when you found out Princess Diana was dead? Like, this is not a sort of reverse. First Geordie 9/11.
He'll remember where he was because he's always outside.
Yeah, exactly.
After that, John McCririck came on in a Newcastle shirt, hat, and scarf. It's like Newcastle's in another dimension that we can, for some reason, see.
Yeah. It's never a dull moment. I love it.
We get it. Brilliant. We get it, Newcastle, right? This is the best thing that's ever happened since Keane got a job again, which was the best thing that ever happened since Keane got a job the first time, which is the best thing that ever happened since, like, Hullett got the job.
Yeah.
Which is the best thing that happened since you threw away that 12-point lead and completely pot.
Yeah, when they signed Alan Shearer, that was good.
Yeah,
as well.
Exactly.
Where you were that day.
Remember when we sold Andy Cole,
And I'm tempted to say, get Shearer in, he'd do his business, and he'll last forever long he lasts, and he'll go, and then that'll be it, and then Newcastle can move on. But what will happen after that? As soon as he leaves or gets sacked and they get someone else in, all the fans will just be going, Shearer back. Yeah. We want him back. Yeah. The return of King Shearer.
He has to be from Newcastle for it to work.
Why
do you think that is? Why do you think there is that idea that only a Geordie will really understand it and make it work?
Well, I don't think there's anything to that. I think it's just complete blarney. It's just complete bullshit. It's a great thing that he's here, but it's kind of like, just because he's got a bit of history in Newcastle and stuff, but you know, once he does it and he fucks it up like every other manager we've had, where do we go then?
Me?
What happens now?
You, Pete.
Me.
Yeah, yeah.
Steve Bruce, maybe.
Exactly. You know what I mean?
Gavin Peacock.
Gavin Peacock.
He's busy monking.
Gavin Peacock is now a professor of theology. Mark.
Really?
I thought he was a monk.
Mirandina.
Maybe both. Mirandina. Yeah. Yeah. Could be. Yeah. I'd like to see Jonas Gutierrez given the job.
I would.
He's playing for Argentina.
He was suspended yesterday, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think in amongst all this, people haven't realised that, Dennis Wise got a bit disgruntled. He's left.
Yeah. Surely that's Cockney Mafia out! Mm.
Well, he said Alan Shearer made a point of he referenced it in his press conference. I had nothing to do with him leaving, but I did make my feelings clear when earlier in the season. That's the thing about being a pundit. You can't really run away from...
No.
Shearer's done well to mention that, though.
The papers are making
attention to it.
Yeah, I think. But the thing that confused me about that, Dennis Wise, there was a newspaper made out. Like, they were completely confused as to why he got rid of Wise because they played together at England. It's like, what's that got to do with anything? You know.
Kieran Dyer and Lee Bowyer played together in a minute.
Exactly. That's ridiculous.
Oh dear.
But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it pans out. I mean, without being cynical, I know we did get on the back of Shearer before because he's a god awful pundit, and we all know that. But he is also, you know, he's a little bit of a character who devised opinion because of his sort of aggressive manner and stuff when he was playing. But I do think, without being too harsh on him, because obviously he hasn't started the job properly yet, and we judge him on results as we always try to. But he can't lose, really.
No.
If they go down, he could probably get away. Well, he can get away with Sam. Well, there's nothing I can do. I did my best. If they stay up, he's the Messiah.
I think he'll stay with you, whatever happens, to be honest. I think if they go down, he can have a proper crack at it.
He's getting 100 grand a game.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Really?
Is he not going to get a bonus of 1.8 million if
they stay up? Yeah, that surprised me. Well, I know he's taking a sabbatical from Match of the Day. He's got to close his contract.
Are they going to stay up, James? Is he going to keep them up?
I think they will. Although it's going to be tough because, I mean, obviously, when you bring in a new manager, you get like a bit of a bounce and a bit of a lift, and that's statistically true as well. Yeah, but their first game is Chelsea. Yeah. So, I mean, they're off the back of losing to Tottenham as well. But, so I wouldn't fired up.
I wouldn't screw with Dowie and Shearer. They're both, you know what I mean, nasty pieces of work.
He's a really nice bloke, but you wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of him. It would get a bit ugly. Pete, is he going to keep him up?
I wouldn't even like to speculate, to be honest. I think it's a terrible... Why are we even in this situation? It's ridiculous. Look at the players you've got. It's ridiculous.
There are worse teams in Newcastle, which is, I think, what...
But if you had to say...
I think.
Jinx!
3 days ago, I would have said down.
Luke? I think they will, yeah. I think
you'll keep them up. There we are.
I think that if, even in a way, it's not even down to them, it's down to the other teams. Because Newcastle have got a tough run in, but I just think that, well, West Brom's having a down.
Yeah.
I think it'll be Middlesbrough.
Because West Brom don't seem to care about defending or marking. So they've recognised there's a problem there, but they just don't really mind.
Someone needs to run in and go, you're doing it wrong!
In another division, in another place.
Far, far away.
From Newcastle, Southampton are in a bit of bother. They're struggling. They financially.
They are struggling. Well, they've got to go into administration, haven't they? Which
crazy.
Is a real shame, I think.
It's happening too much, isn't it?
It's happening so much. And haven't they found a loophole, though, which means because they won't get points deducted because it's their holdings company that are the company going into administration.
That can't stay in place. Yeah, because any team could do that. Then. Mm. Yeah, I mean, Luton won't be happy about that.
No, they won't. Although, I mean, from Luton's point of view, they should be looking at getting their points back rather than saying Southampton should have points docked. Because obviously it's a massive injustice that they've had their points docked, and they can't then go and say another team should deserve it because they're saying that it's fundamentally wrong in the first place.
Well, I mean, the FA...
they will say that.
The FA are not helping themselves because they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. They probably don't want to see teams having to have points deducted, but they can't not deduct points for Southampton and a little technicality like that. Doesn't mean, but they've got to sort of, if the laws are there to be sort of upheld. Yeah. And whether they're right or wrong, they need to do that. I think Southampton, obviously, as we probably all know, really, really struggled to, because they got relegated. Poor management, and probably, you know, I mean, it will be interesting to see what happens on Saturday when they play because Rupert Lowe has resigned today, I think, and. A lot of the fans were staying away in protest at Rupert Lowe. Mm. So it'll be interesting to see if they come back. The prices have come down to about £15 a seat, I think. So
do you reckon,
they need to fill the stadium, really.
Do you reckon old Harry Redknapp will go back and save the club?
Well, you know, Harry Redknapp will hopefully having a bit of trouble sleeping at the moment, but I doubt it.
Is it all due to the stadium, like 10 years ago or whatever?
Yeah. It's due to they took about 27 million quid loan out to pay for the stadium.
And then went down and...
Well, yeah, they got relegated under Redknapp a few years ago, and they can't pay it.
It's not even that long ago, is it? It's been such a dramatic fall from grace.
The stadium held a World Cup qualifier.
Yeah. They used to fill it every week. I mean, when they first got relegated, they used to fill it every week as well, even in the Championship. But they've had the squad ripped out of them. They can't afford a manager. They were doing that. They started a bit of a turnaround to Pearson, but he left.
Yeah.
Couldn't keep up. Couldn't pay him. So it's one of those things. It just snowballs. Yeah. You know, it's one thing after another. And I obviously I'm a Portsmouth fan. And Portsmouth have gone, but in a way, I sort of know what it's like because Portsmouth have been down to the fourth division and been in trouble. Yeah. And they're in financial trouble now, Portsmouth. The only difference is they're just doing all right.
I mean, it shows you with a club like Southampton that were in the top division just for years. Well, that was such a long time. Yeah. They stayed up and they kept scraping, staying up.
Yeah.
Occasionally, they'd sort of push up a bit and push on.
Well, under Strachan, they'd do okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It just shows you that no one's safe from that. That's aside from the real sort of like top level clubs, it could happen to the most established clubs where you look at them and think, that won't happen to them.
Look at Leeds last week.
Leeds is fantastic. They were one of the top clubs.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, people Champions League semi-final.
Even in the 70s and stuff like that as well. Yeah. They're absolutely massive.
Huge club.
I think people would still argue Leeds are still one of the biggest clubs in the country, arguably.
Yeah. Man City went all the way down, didn't they? And they've...
See, what we've established is that sometimes clubs go down and then they come up again, but they can also go down again within the laws of the game.
And some clubs are good, they just sort of stay there.
Insight.
I'm bowled over by the educational insight.
But it's no club at the moment is that flush with cash, so they're not spending that much on players. So teams aren't receiving the money. So, you know what I mean? It's only going to get worse. You know what I mean? It's not like with player sales you're going to make any money nowadays because nobody's going to pay any money.
I just think...
There isn't any.
There's no money.
I think to myself...
Money don't work no more.
I stopped myself trying to and taking a little bit of pressure out of Southampton being in real trouble. And I think to myself, do I really want like a big city with loads of kids in it to not have a club to support?
Yeah,
it's really sad, I think.
It is sad.
Mm. Over in Spain, a place where we often go, sometimes I have to drag you kicking and screaming, but we're going to go back there. Villarreal have suddenly come out and said that they're going to offer unemployed season ticket holders free passes in the 2009-2010.
That's awesome.
That is amazing.
And this is because of the global economic crisis. President Fernando Roig, I think that's pronounced, he said this, that season ticket holders who are on the dole will be allowed in free next year. The idea is to think of the club's wider social base and those who have been unlucky to lose their jobs so they can continue to watch football.
The dole would be far more appealing if you could get tickets from it.
Far less depressing.
So.
That is magnificent.
The Yellow Submarines. They're a really likable club.
They really are. They're another club that's built up from nothing. They were semi-professional, 10 years ago, something?
Is it as recent as that?
Mm. It's incredible.
I'd quite like to go and see them play against Arsenal, actually.
Mm. Well, and one of the strikers, Llorente, said that... he said, we're keen to get involved in this kind of idea, and there are many people without work, and it's a shame that they don't come to the stadium because of this.
Aren't the players putting some of the money in for this?
I think there might be an element of that. I don't know how much or what percentage of the salary or anything, but it's just fantastic. Here we are. We're actually talking about watching football, and it's a case of... Well, if we don't do this, a lot of people might not be able to come and see it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
There's no kind of
we can't have empty seats. It's brilliant.
I don't understand why, and that is obviously magnificent. They're
currently fourth. They're fourth in the in La Liga, and they're facing Arsenal in the quarterfinals of the Champions League.
Yeah.
This is not a kind of it's one of those clubs down the bottom a bit, and maybe got a little bit of cash or whatever, so they can do this.
I think it might be for their humble beginnings have kept them humble.
Yeah, totally.
It's brilliant.
Well, I mean, Arsenal fans would probably disagree, given they're charging them about £75 a ticket for the Champions League.
Really?
Game. Yeah. But I mean,
that'll bring them back down to
earth. Yeah, but I think Arsenal will probably charge them Villarreal that much as well, so that's just the way it goes. But I think that I sometimes see, like, when you look at, like, I don't know, Leeds or something. Because not so long ago, there was talk of Leeds. Like, I remember listening to Five Live and people were ringing into the 606 after all the games on a Saturday night, and there was hundreds of fans ringing in from Leeds saying that they went to Ellen Road to watch them play at home, so I think they're at home to QPR. And they were just walking away again because it was like £30 to go and watch Leeds, and they're in League One.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, why would you do that? Yeah. Why when you watch the Championship on ITV or whatever, and you see a Championship side or a League One side, and half the stadium is empty.
Yeah.
Why have they not got an agreement with like local schools and stuff to get kids to watch it? Not only are you benefiting by having a great atmosphere at the club, you are also getting a load of young kids to love it, who are probably going to go on and become affluent people, a lot of them, to love a club and support your club. In the long term, it makes sense.
It embeds the club in the community.
And maybe play for that club.
There was times in the 90s, though, where like most England matches was just full of school children, wasn't it? Remember?
I went a couple of times, yeah. Yeah, and it just seems like they've got it all wrong. Everything. Do you not think everything about football in this country is just overwhelmingly short term all the time.
Yeah, definitely.
There's living hand to mouth, day to day. Taking the money they when they can now, you know.
There's an air of exclusivity rather than of encouragement. Do you know what I mean? It's like you can come to the game if you fork out this much money and if you join this and if you sign up to this and if blah, 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 blah. There's no sort of. It's not as inviting as it has been in the past.
Every part of
it. Even when we were kids.
Well, there was a stupid thing when Palace were in the Premiership. A friend of mine used to go, he used to be season ticket holder there, and it still is, I think. And he said that he would go one of the matches to one of the bigger teams, say, who they were playing, and it was, you know, that Category A, Category B kind of stuff they do with teams. You have to pay slightly more if it's a Category A team and all that kind of stuff. And they were being turned away, a lot of fans. They were saying, no, you can't buy this ticket, because if you've got to buy this ticket, you've got to get another one for this game and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And they were going, look, here's 35 quid.
Yeah.
I want to put it in your hand. You're not going to get this.
Yeah.
And you will have an empty seat because of your stupid pissing rules.
Yeah.
And they go, and he said he'd go in and there'd be empty seats.
Yeah.
It's almost like, turned away hundreds of people.
It's like Man United's season ticket policy, wasn't it? Where if you got a season ticket, you had to buy FA Cup tickets.
It's Carling Cup, isn't it?
Was it Carling
Cup? You have to buy them. You can't not buy them.
Outrageous.
You have to buy them.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's FA Cup. It's definitely the Carling Cup. I've seen the changes at Port. I mean, right, being a bit Uncle Albert about it, I've seen the changes at Portsmouth, and I'm still obviously quite young, but I've seen it. I can remember when the mascots of Pompey used to be just kids from the local school, or maybe the disabled kids, or kids who don't have the best start in life being mascots, because that was a nice day out. That's a nice thing to do. Now it's like the richest parents who could afford for their kid to be a mascot, and there's not one mascot, there's 11, and you have to pay 500 quid.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But you get your name in the programme.
I remember down at the Arsenal. When the games was all black and white in the days. You didn't have to worry about getting your ration book, Nick. Not like nowadays. I know the war's over, but I like to keep it on me just in case it breaks out again.
Yeah. Bring the war back.
Is it Spurs that are renting out their ground for like 18 grand? You can play like an 11-a-side match on Spurs' ground for like 18 grand.
They're not the only ones to do that.
It's a lot of money though, isn't it, eh?
Yeah, but
if you're a big company, a lot of grounds as
I'm
well,
only good for 20 minutes. I can't run for any more than that.
Yeah.
Anyway, now we've put the football world to rights, Marcus.
Once again,
slaying it with a sword of truth.
Yeah.
And shouting, bring back the war.
We don't care for society.
Washing it down with a hot cup of justice. Hey? Hey? Rabble justice. Sticks in your throat.
Sheriff John Bunnell.
Yeah, retired.
Look at this guy. He thinks he's king of the road.
I am a seriously happy person. Frank Lampard has said very recently that the young players have got it too easy now, and that the old apprentice system of cleaning players' boots, etc., should be brought back.
Yeah, I agree with him.
Yeah. We've gone all sepia today, haven't we? Bring the war back. Yeah, it ain't like what it used to be.
Well, I didn't realise that happened. I didn't know that happened until a few days ago.
It's all about humility, isn't it? You've got to put some graft in as a kid. Because when you're a kid, or a teenager, it's such a formative sort of time. Mm. And you've got to learn some respect then, and if you don't ever have that, you're less likely to gain it on the way.
That's what we're seeing now.
That's absolutely what we're seeing now.
You should. I mean, I was listening to Five Live, and they were saying about that. You know, Rio Ferdinand. To be fair, I mean, obviously we had another guy we normally have a pop at, but to his credit, he was saying that he came on the show and he said, "Well, my professional when I was an apprentice was Tony Cotty," and he said, "I was shit scared of him. He used to chuck his boots at me after a game, so clean them, you know, and if they weren't done properly, he'd go and get him from where the youth team were training, the apprentice were training, and." Grab him in front of the team, just dig him out in front of everyone.
Can you imagine Tony Cotty bullying Rio Ferdinand now?
Well, Tony Cotty said the reason I used to do it is because Frank Lampard Sr. used to do that to me. And now Rio Ferdinand's going, it's not fair, I haven't got anyone to dig out. Do you know what I mean? It's not happening anymore.
Didn't Paul Gascoigne now famously refuse to clean Chris Waddle's shoes?
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, he did it badly, I think.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, what did Hoddle?
Oh, my favourite one was
shoes.
Hoddle.
You say shoes.
You can imagine Hoddle being like this. Yeah. Look, one, because I did a little bit of research into it. And Hoddle, when he was playing manager at Swindon, he was obviously the big man. He was the big cheese around there. Well, one of England's finest passers we've ever produced. And he used to be playing manager at Swindon. And then apparently one of the apprentices did a little piece and said, "Oh, I used to clean Glenn Hoddle's boots." And this guy, he wasn't famous. I don't think he ever really made it as a professional. But everyone, all the pros were coming back in after training, and they're giving their boots to their apprentices. And apparently in front of everyone, Glenn Hoddle pulls his boots off, gives them to his apprentice in front of everyone, and they're a pair of suede football boots. And he just looks at him in front of everyone, gives him a wink, and goes, "These will test you." Ha 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 ha! There you go, son. Those will test you.
That's brilliant.
But it doesn't happen anymore. And the reason they said that is because, oh, well, you know, the pitches are so good these days and the players change their boots every game. There's still jobs to be done. Yeah, clean the changing rooms, yeah. Sweep the stands,
what
all that
up,
sort
what
of stuff.
What happened to, like, the YTS kids? Do you remember there was YTS boys?
Well, what happens now is that because they start so young and they don't want to get tapped up by anyone else, they probably give them contracts as soon as they can, make them sign things. Yeah, I don't think they have the YTS anymore.
I think loads of clubs have tons and tons of professionals because they do exactly that. Liverpool have got over 60 professionals on their books.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it?
Their full squad. Arsenal have got about 50 as well. Chelsea and Man United are similar. It's just unbelievable.
Mm. I think you're right.
I think Villa have got 15. It is as well.
But you look at some.
It's a real shame.
But you look at some of the young players who suddenly burst on the scene, and they do look really arrogant. And you just think, man, you've been pampered, haven't you?
You've been pampered, Nicholas Benner.
Yeah. I think it's okay for a young professional or a young apprentice at a football club to have a bit of confidence, because obviously that's important. And if he wants to swan around like sort of cocker to walk down his local, that's fine. Mm. But as long as when he gets in on the Monday, he gets brought down to earth and is made to be a bit deferential to the players who have actually made it, you know?
Yeah.
Because the problem with these people, like as we've said before, I think it was Stuart Pearce who said, Micah Richards' biggest problem and the biggest reason for his change in form is because when he drives up to the City of Manchester Stadium at 19 years old, there's a 100-foot poster of him on the stadium.
Yeah.
How is that good for keeping his feet on the ground?
Yeah,
you know?
It's not, is it?
It's unbelievable what happens these days. It wouldn't happen in my day.
No.
No?
It should always be remembered that no player is bigger than the club.
Exactly, Marcus. No presenter is bigger than the Ramble.
Yeah.
Some might argue.
I think there should be stop reproduction companies making life-size pictures of shit players.
Yeah, is that right? Is that a campaign you want to get behind?
I think I was just in Jesus Park and I saw a big picture of Peter Beers and I thought, right. Next door, brilliant. Though, Shola fucking Amiola.
No, no. Not needed.
Not needed. Does not deserve that.
That's a disgrace to Peter Beardsley.
They may as well have me up there. I'm on top of my radio game, so...
Exactly. Maybe that was just an advert for R&B hits 49.
Yeah. Was Peter Beardsley's poster already lopsided to tie him with his jaw?
Right. A mate of mine once handed me a candle when I was in a pub and said, make a picture of Peter Beardsley and that, and I did. And it looked like him.
Good. I need photo evidence.
I'll try and find it. There is some, actually.
Thanks. Listeners' views.
First day in.
Made me laugh.
Otherwise known as the emails. Yeah. Hi, gents. I listened for the first time to your podcast last week. Brilliant stuff and much needed. Don't know whether he's talking about himself or the bigger picture.
Let's assume all, because he'd be within the bigger picture.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's pointing out a little mistake we made. He said Brian Clough doesn't have a statue at the Riverside Stadium in Middlesbrough. It was situated in Albert Park, which is en route from his Valley Road home to Ayresome Park, but has been recently removed due to pesky vandals. Yours forever, Degsy. Who the hell would vandalise that?
Well, first of all, thanks to Degsy for pointing that out.
Yeah, thank you, Degsy. First, it seemed just like a bit of geographical pedantry.
Trivia.
But now...
That's outrageous.
Why would you do that?
I've seen that. I've actually, and obviously, thanks for pointing out the mistake. I've seen the statue. It's a really nice one of Clough as a young man walking with his boots over his shoulder. It's a really nice statue. So whoever's vandalised that, I'll fight them.
Yeah. And you're a dick.
Yeah.
Assuming it was just one. Yeah. If it's not dicks...
Probably more than one, because they're just impressing their mates, Marcus.
Hey? Who put them up to it in the bloody first place.
Pete, you're from that part of the world. What inspires young vagabonds to vandalise things in a delinquent manner?
Peer pressure. Newcastle? Have you seen The Simpsons? Jeremiah Springfield,
Jeremiah Pressure. Yeah.
Well, I blame the parents. Right, next one. Love the pod, Luke.
Thanks. He's got his priorities right, hasn't he, eh? He knows which side his bread's buttered on. Yeah. I better take this one.
If you could remember the word cast at the end of pod, that would be great.
I can remember last time someone emailed in saying how great I was. I got cut out mysteriously, didn't
it? Because it was you that emailed in.
Oh, yeah.
From Luke.
I didn't send it in, you just
said
it.
Yeah, yeah. It was actually my dad, all right? It wasn't me.
I want to know whether you can shed any light on when Rory Delap discovered that he could take long throw-ins. That's a good point, that. I don't know if it's just me, but I can never remember him being able to do this until this season. Has he only just discovered this ability? That's from Aaron Dutton.
I do remember Harry Redknapp saying a little while ago that when he was managing him at Southampton, I think it was, he didn't know he could do that. So it seems like Rory Delap's never tried it, and he's just sort of suddenly realised what he can do.
Do you know why Harry Redknapp's not noticed that he could do that? Because there was probably nothing in it for him.
Hangs over his eyes.
Yeah, he can throw the ball like that, but what's in it for me? I don't remember that either. I've seen him play a few times, and it doesn't stick in the mind.
No.
Maybe he's...
It's a good point, though.
Yeah, maybe he just got told they weren't interested in it until then, and now it's part of Stoke's tactics.
I'm actually very good at throwing... just like to throw my hat in the ring.
in what way?
And I've won it where I can throw it really far. You'd think that I wouldn't, because I don't have the muscles on out, but...
Or now.
I'm genuinely good at it. Maybe I've got long arms or something, I don't know. But it's
we'll have a look, Pete.
It genuinely works.
Pete, maybe you could go and make a video of that and we'll put it on the MySpace.
Well, yeah.
I don't Pete think that was boring enough.
Okay, I'll make a video of it.
Rory Delap's got really big ears, I don't know if anybody's noticed that. But that was until last season. Next one. Morning Ramblers. No, it isn't.
Not now.
But it's a good question, though.
We're not time pedants here. Yeah.
Who do you think will replace Alan Shearer on the Match of the Day sofa with the incisive input he brings? That's from Neil Moore.
Alan Partridge.
Yeah, won't be Pardew.
I thought you were going to say Partridge.
Bring Alan Partridge.
Goal!
Yeah. That's actually got to be a bit of a silver lining to that cloud, isn't it?
They'll probably just promote Lee Dixon, maybe, someone like that.
Yeah.
Let's get one of the other ones.
I'd like to see Gavin Peacock.
He's gone,
Peacock's a month now.
Has he?
He's left. He's out of the game,
He's monkeying.
He's what?
He's monkeying.
Is he really?
He's a monk in Canada.
Oh, so he is.
It'll be someone
That's really cheered me up, actually. I'm glad.
It'll be someone like...
I might go and visit him.
Dixon or Keown. I don't have Dixon and Keown. I mean, good players and that, but when they have them on the... People don't think at any stage, good player doesn't equal good pundit.
No.
They could do... I'll tell you what I'd like to see him do.
Pele, for example.
Yeah, exactly. I don't mind Adrian Charles, so fine, keep him in on Match of the Day too.
Did you see Stuart Lee described Adrian Charles as a Toby jug that somehow learned to speak and is full of piss?
That's good, isn't it?
I quite like Adrian Charles, though. He's alright. Yeah, come on, leave him alone.
Leave him alone, man.
Why is he picking on him?
Well, ask Pete.
Ask him. He's sitting there.
He's a smug, round. I can't stand the man.
I know what you want. You don't like how close he's becoming to Christine Blakely.
That's it, innit?
I like that man who does walkie-bouts on Match of the Tier 2 who looks a bit like him.
Kevin Day. Oh, he's a fucking bellend.
I know he is.
He's a bellend.
Oh, yeah. 6 2 3s.
So this is what I'd like to have. I'd like to have drafts into Match of the Day, get rid of Lineker, get in James Richardson. Or Marcus Spiller.
He'd have too much for him. Oh, Lucky Moore.
Well, thank you very much, Pete. I was waiting for someone to say that. Good man.
By the way, we had to edit out the massive long silence there.
Been here for days.
I'll keep Hanson in because I think Hanson will be good if he had good people around him.
Yeah, I like Hanson.
And do you know who I'd slot in there, Marcus and Jim and Pete? I'd slot in Ray Butch Wilkins.
Yeah, you like a bit of Butch,
like
didn't
him,
you?
Yeah. But Wilkins is Sky Sports. So BBC's he's not going to go.
Contracts
ego
can be broken, mate.
Ray Wilkins is a talent that should be enjoyed by everyone.
But I think Wilkins and Hoddle are good pundits, actually.
Hoddle's all right, yeah.
Is Wilkins still at Chelsea, though?
He is, I think, yeah.
Oh, I tell you what. Yeah. Do you reckon old Jamie Redknapp might pop over?
Oh bloody
get
hell.
Get stuffed.
I've known that expression
that
for years.
That'd literally be shit.
Yeah. It would be. Oh, by the way, speaking of pundits and football, I've got to mention this quickly. I'll do that in a minute. Everyone's favourite... the Ramble's favourite TV presenter / football man, a real man of the game at a grassroots level, a knowledgeable man, Tim Lovejoy, has been in the papers. I'm not sure if anyone's seen it, but I know you boys haven't, so I thought I'd bring it up. He's doing that Sunday cookery programme now, isn't he?
Yeah.
And you know what he did on Sunday Kitchen, whatever it was, last week?
He burnt it.
Yeah. Well, you know the Australian Grand Prix, the Formula One Grand Prix? It was on the middle of the night because it was in Australia. But what the BBC, or whatever it was, the BBC were doing, they weren't showing it live. I didn't think anyone would watch it. So they didn't bother exercising their right. They showed it at 1 p.m.
Yeah.
So everyone could watch it. So naturally, there's loads of people avoiding the result and stuff. Tim Lovejoy, who knew the result, on Sunday Kitchen, just because, from what I could see, just because he's an utter prick, right, told everyone the result and was really pleased with himself. He was like, oh, yeah, well, I like watching it. You know, I don't mind watching it when I know the result. So, yeah, surely we want to talk about it. So, and he just told everyone the result.
What?
He consistently, right? He can't read the autocue, for one. He's terrible at reading autocue. He just reads it like a dead man, mate.
He just
gazes blankly in the camera. And he consistently tries to change the conversation to, do you watch the football in? No, I'm a fucking chef. I'm cooking souffle.
I like when he said that. Do you watch the football then? I'd like David James to walk in and go, what do you know about football? That'd be amazing.
That would be truly
Lovejoy.
Awesome.
Lovejoy. So that's what Lovejoy's been up to this week.
Lovejoy, we middle finger salute you.
Yeah, don't think because he's not on Soccer M anymore, he's not fucking people off. He is. I better read this out as well, I promised I would. there's a couple of boys, well, there's a few boys actually, doing a charity five-a-side game. And they're going to try and break the world record.
Where is this happening?
It's happening down in Bristol. They're going to play five-a-side without stopping for 36 hours. Cool. And I'll just read out what it says, because I think it's for the Meningitis Trust and for a couple of other charities, Kids Adventure and things like that. And it says, on the 11th and 12th of April 2009, so that's next week after Easter, footballing history will be made in the Bristol Academy Footballathon, backed by ex-Liverpool and Wales legend Ian Rush, MBE. The Bristol Academy Footballathon at Filton College will see two teams go head-to-head in an epic test of stamina and endurance. For 36 hours, the brave volunteers will attempt to set a new world record for the longest continuous football match ever played, which currently stands at 33 hours, 36 minutes. The sponsored event is being held to raise money for Meningitis Trust and Birmingham-based charity Kids Adventure. So if you want to sponsor the event, go to www.worldrecordfootball.co.uk or justgiving.com/worldrecordfootball.
That's great.
Brilliant.
That's from Stephen Rigby. So good luck with that, chaps.
Good on you, mate.
Drop us an email and let us know how you get on.
Pierce yourself as well,
actually. Yeah, exactly.
Just because you get your applause, you're not in the Dean Windass Hall of Fame.
No, but that may come if you do it.
It's very true, very true. Yeah. Send us your profile.
Yeah.
My bit now. Do we have a jingle?
Kind of. Luke?
Funny stories, story zone.
Amazing.
I fucked it up. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
That'll do, isn't it?
That's fine.
Listeners don't expect anything good.
No, not from you. We're going straight to Argentina now, boys.
Oh,
I know you enjoy doing that.
Again?
Yes, again. Because something ridiculous has happened in South America, would you believe?
Hands up if you've been there. That'll just be me, then.
Violence in Argentinian football is not exactly an uncommon occurrence at the moment. But last Saturday, a situation erupted that was far from normal. Oh. An encounter in Primera C ended with one team having all of their players sent off, including substitutes. Baracas Bolivar and General La Madrid. They're wrestlers. They're not, they're not football teams. No wonder it was violent. They were the two teams involved. And when the incident occurred, the home side were leading 3-0. However, with 60 minutes gone, the game had to be abandoned after what can only be described as an extraordinary series of events. Like this is a children's book. It started when three players and four staff from La Madrid became involved in a dispute between the local fans of Bolivar. The incident soon escalated, and within moments, all of the players from the away side came over to defend their teammates and staff, clashing with supporters. Plenty of punches were thrown, and the violence had to be broken up by some of those present at the stadium. In seeing what apparently, in seeing what had happened, the referee decided to issue 18 red cards to the team, sending off not just the 11 players on the pitch, but also the 7 substitutes. Not only did the decision destroy the encounter, but it means La Madrid will have to play with a full team of reserve players in the next match.
Well, the league's never been so wealthy, is it?
This is not unknown in Latin America. A Uruguayan Clásico between Montevideo sides Peñarol and Nacional in 1990.
That's always kicking
that
play.
22 derby. Dismissals due to a brawl between every person on the pitch, bar the referee.
Do you know something? That statistic. That Uruguay derby, that's statistically like the third biggest derby in the world.
It's massive.
Yeah,
it is massive.
Huge.
I saw a bit about that Bolivar game in the paper.
And
the thing is, surely they're going to get banned for more than one game because it's violent conduct, right?
Yeah. Well, so, it's straight red, so that's surely 3 games.
Where's the manager in all this?
he's just shaking his head going, oh,
he's
not
fighting
not
in
again.
The stands.
He's saying, come on, they haven't done nothing.
Don't laugh if you don't find it funny, James.
Yeah. Don't normally.
No,
I don't. Okay, right. Dimitar Berbatov's been in the news again.
You're always bringing him up.
I know, right?
Is he just dad's a Satanist?
That was his father, and his father's not a Satanist.
Exorcist.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
There's a difference.
Do apologise. Any libel lawyers
he
listening?
He exercises the demons down the gym.
Yeah.
Right, this is from The Sun, which we also enjoy, right? Dirty Bulgar, like Dirty Bugger, see what they've done?
Dirty Bulgar.
Immediately with a pun.
You're
Dirty
Bulgarian.
Dirty Bulgar Dimitar Berbatov has been turned into Dimitar Bubatov after a porn star painted him with her breasts.
This is just a comic. People who read this, listen,
please. Got his own like section in
this
the.
This is an emotional plea. This is an emotional plea to everyone who buys The Sun. That first line is a real line from that newspaper. So next time you read something like that, stop
it.
Think about what you've become as a person.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. It's a comic. It's just a comic with tits instead of cartoons.
Yeah.
When it says 20p on it, that's
it's a rip-off. It's a rip-off.
Italian model Simba, she's called Simba,
that's
another
it.
Cartoon, used her huge assets to paint her favourite football star, and after putting the finishing touches to it, she's heading to Britain to deliver it in person.
Why did
he... Berber, a keen painter himself, is he, didn't sit for the artwork, funnily enough.
He paints for the football, James, and the pitch is his canvas.
Yes, but a pal joked... Did he really, though? Dimmy may not be much of an art lover, but he knows what he likes. I don't believe that was ever
this
said.
This is where we need David James to come and go, what do you know about art? Yeah. Yeah, yeah. What do you know about news?
What do you know about tits?
Loads. Yeah, yeah. But why do the Sun always refer to women's breasts as assets?
Or fun bags.
It sickens me.
They do sometimes say fun bags.
Core.
That's amazing.
It's an awful newspaper.
It really, really is.
It's a woeful newspaper.
They also say that people have romps a lot.
Yeah,
no, and I've never romped.
Nookie. Romps. Yeah. Hey, lots of words that don't really exist outside the sort of vernacular of a tabloid newspaper.
It's like the Beano, isn't it?
People read it's this like newspaper.
No, but the thing is, it's not even the worst thing about it. They use it and they take it as their main news source.
Yeah.
That's the problem. That's the main problem. It doesn't matter if you read it. I mean, it's fine. You can read a porno. As long as you don't think that's the real world, it's fine. Do you know what I mean? But some people do take it as their main source of news. It's worrying, mate. Yeah, but you put the whole mood down reading that out.
I'm upset. Genuinely, this is my favourite part of the fortnight.
And I've spoiled
really
it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Pull your trousers down.
I'm really, really vaguely sorry.
Pete's going to spank you.
Carry on. Brilliant. Carry on.
Okay, next bit, right? It's the ultimate in metrosexual footballing experiences. It's to happen in Milan, but for once, won't involve David Beckham. Yeah. Stop relating everything to David Beckham.
Is this the Sun again?
The news.
Is this the Sun again?
No. This is from theinternet.com.
I've completed the internet and I've not seen that.
It's a new bit. It's an add-on.
Fucking hell.
Andrea Vassa, a 30-year-old defender, will today start living in his life in a fashion store. Vassa, who plays for local side Brera, has been provided with a luxuriously appointed flat in a mega boutique being opened in Italy's style capital by German-born designer Dirk Bickenbergs. The snag is that the customers will be able to call on the player during shopping hours, wander around his home and rummage through his cupboards, packed with products ranging from couture jackets to high-performance underwear. High-performance underwear? What does that even mean? Visitors must ring Vassa's doorbell, but there is every chance they will drop into the apartment, located between the shirt department and the trouser rails, while he is catching a nap, drinking with friends or even taking a shower. Just an example of some of the things you can do in your living quarters. Yeah. Vassa, who is single, ladies, will not be able to pick and choose guests. Obviously not. It's a shop. His role will be to be admired alongside the sunglasses, sweaters and football boots. In a concession to modesty, his shower is papered with pages from Gazzetta dello Sport. Bickenberg said the aim was to allow the store's customers to identify themselves with a sporting personality.
What the hell?
Look, take Andrea Vassa, have a long look at your life.
Pete, would you like to live in a fashion store?
I'd like to live in Caesar's fashion store in Sunderland. He's got a shop in Sunderland.
Hasn't he?
Yeah.
The thing is,
wouldn't want to live in Mike Ashley's shop. One of them.
Do you know what I think? I think if it was me,
sure, I'm about to hear it.
If it was me, I wouldn't answer the door.
If it was me, I wouldn't move into a fucking shop.
Jim, some people haven't got choice.
No, I suppose
it's
not.
It's a welfare state, yeah?
Yeah, I suppose.
I don't know. I mean, Jimbo, I wouldn't ever doubt your integrity for a second, so you wouldn't have just made that up. But I just don't know. You know, I sometimes think to myself, what sort of world do we live in?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's player profile time. This time we're going for a man who is currently playing.
Right this minute.
Yeah, and you could argue that
in the studio.
He's in his peak years. It's Juan Roman Riquelme.
Hey, awesome.
Hey,
awesome.
Welcome in.
Yeah, Romy.
Not yet. I've got to do the spiel and then he comes in. Born 24th June 1978.
Once again, he's won the sperm race. He's another person in the Dean Windass Hall of Fame that's just a natural winner.
Obviously an Argentinian midfielder. Currently playing for Boca Juniors in the Argentine division. He can be described as he's a classic number 10 playmaker, old-fashioned number 10 playmaker, with a very elegant and an unhurried style.
He's awesome, basically.
He is.
His position is awesome.
Well, let's get straight.
He's the classic awesome, I'd go as far as
yeah. Yeah.
He's the classico classic.
Can you imagine that when he's chatting up a bird in the bar? What position do you play? Oh, traditional awesome.
He had very harsh upbringing. At the age of 10, he used to turn up for his youth side, Argentinos Juniors.
Maradona's youth side.
His dad was a gangster, wasn't he?
Dad was a gangster, and his dad would make him play in matches in the shanty towns, which were the basis for illegal gambling rings. But onto the football. his youth clubs, as I said, were Argentinos Juniors, and then he signed for Boca Juniors when he was very young, 1995, as a youth player, and turned professional in 96. He had seven successful seasons with Boca Juniors, did really well there, and this caught the eye of Barcelona. He had 150 appearances for Boca Juniors, 38 goals. I mean, that's
exactly the same career path as Diego Maradona, isn't it, up to Barca?
He loved Boca as well.
He did love him. Well, he did.
I don't think he wanted to leave. I don't think the fans wanted to leave.
Well,
either.
That's right. Well, there was often is in South America in a controversy around the transfer. I mean, this was shortly after his brother Christian was kidnapped, and Riquelme actually negotiated and paid the ransom for his brother's release. And he said this was one of the reasons why he chose to leave Boca. But it was suggested
more
perhaps,
than that, wasn't there?
Well, there was a bit more than that. And actually, they think that he never really wanted to leave because he loves the club. This is genuine love for a club. And
he wanted a new contract. And they weren't offering him money.
They made a little bit of a plea because they needed the money. But anyway, he went to Barcelona. And the coach at the time was Louis van Gaal, and he described Riquelme as a political signing.
I think van Gaal was trying to recreate a classic Dutch team, I think. Yeah. Put him out on the wing.
Who was there at the time? Does anyone remember?
Well, he had Overmars and Zenden, which were wingers, and I think that was a real focal point. He had he would have had Kluivert.
He tried to sign the whole Dutch natural side.
Very Dutch.
And then when he left, they signed Ronaldinho, so he had no chance. Basically.
Well, when he left, they did sign Ronaldinho. He was loaned out to Villarreal. This is where it really sort of began to happen for him in Europe.
He must be the biggest player to ever play for Villarreal.
Yeah, well, he was a big part of the development of that club, and we talked about that club earlier. So more. You know, from not very much from humble beginnings, not that far, not that long ago, they've really shot up, and they're now in Champions League for crying out loud. And he was a big part of all that kind of stuff. He was surrounded by other South American players there, which I think helped. And he had the Argentine.
Soren
was there. Yeah, absolutely.
He was a good player.
Excellent player.
Awful haircut.
Terrible.
Yeah. But let him off.
Mullet.
It was a
classic mullet.
No. He was much more.
Oh, I'm thinking of Ortega. Serene had like a long hair.
Yeah, it was quite a thing. Yeah. At the end of the 2004-2005 season, the Spanish sports newspaper Marca awarded him the title of artistic player.
Which is cool. Which is
like, you'd be having that. You can just have, like, Gibril Cissé as Lord of the Manor of Frodsham. The artistic player, Juan Roman Riquelme.
Why not?
And Peter Crouch is Lord of the Robot.
And they finished third in the Primera Division in that season. And he got a nomination for World Player of the Year. Obviously didn't win it, but he got a nomination. I've never had a nomination.
No. Some would argue... Like,
injustice.
Unjustly. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's all politics, Marcus, isn't it, when you get to our level?
Certainly. He had 106 appearances for Villarreal, scored 36 goals. I mean, that's a great return.
No disrespect to the other players, from what I saw, he basically was that team.
Yeah, he turned that team around, absolutely.
Well, it was the semi-final of the Champions League, we missed a penalty, which would have taken them to 1-0. Lehmann saved it, didn't he? They could have won the... I mean, I know it's probably a bit of a jump to say they could have won the Champions League, but...
Imagine
if they had won the Champions League.
Yeah.
This is the thing about Riquelme. That's why I think, I mean, we're all day saying whether he's as good as him, but you can compare him, Maradona, to that way because he just takes teams on.
Yeah.
And he is the team.
But the thing is, he does it much more subtly than someone like Maradona. You know, the defence splitting passes, just making the game slow down and all that kind of stuff. He basically just does what he wants. And because he is a very slow player, people often criticise him for this, but he is a very slow player, likes to just amble around.
Own pace,
exactly.
He splits opinion in Argentina, as far as I know, because there's a load of fans who love him because he reminds them of the old sort of style of football where they used to all sit around in the community and watch the game together and stuff. And he's a really old fashioned sort of player. But I think there's a lot of fans who get a little bit frustrated with the slowness of his play, especially international level.
Yeah, also he's actually quite a sort of emotional guy, isn't he?
Oh, absolutely.
He can't take criticism at all.
Very much so.
The national.
Well, he's famous for that quote saying, "When the team loses, it is always Riquelme's fault."
That's right.
Well, you're right, James. Very introverted character, and he needs to be reassured a lot, and everything needs to be on his own terms, you know, because he is the absolute heartbeat of that side, and Villarreal knew this, and obviously they had a lot of South American players there, which kind of made him feel at home a bit more, but they would let him. I mean, he brought a plane load of friends over from where he was from in Buenos Aires, you know, and the club would be fine with that. He would just do what he wants. They never questioned his injuries. They'd turn a blind eye if he didn't fancy training. You know, they built a team around him, as you say.
He's like a classic, like, fucking French existentialist character, man, like a real outsider.
Yeah,
he could be in an Albert Camus book or something. Yeah.
In 2007, they allowed him to travel back to Argentina for the birth of his son, and he returned. He didn't even say thanks, apparently. And when he returned, he had a little bit of extended stay, which he shouldn't have done, and he just didn't fancy training when he came back. And Pellegrini, who was in charge at the time, just that was the final straw, which is such a shame because, you know, well, it's good that, I mean, he's now back at Boca, but it's good to see him at the club he loves. But
you say back at Boca again, I like it.
I think the amount of quality he's got affords him a little bit more leeway and a little bit more rope to have a bit more freedom, especially at a club like Villarreal, which, with all due respect, is one of the smaller clubs in the top league in Spain.
Yeah, sure. I mean, but unfortunately, he just took the piss, really, you know. In February 2007, he went back on loan to Boca, and he played a huge part in Boca's success in the Copa Libertadores in 2007. And they Boca weren't a good side.
No, they were a poor side.
Again, he's just gone in there and done his stuff.
They had Palermo, who's a bit of a legend around those parts, one of the other players, and Riquelme just came in and lifted him.
And it is so difficult to win the Copa Libertadores, you know.
Do you not think, watching him play, I'm not sure if you boys agree, I might be a sort of step too far. He's got a bit of a Zidane about him.
Yeah, absolutely.
The way he controls the ball and the way he controls the game.
Yeah,
he does. And the ball's always on like a string. Yeah. And he's not obviously skillful and tricky. He's big and strong, but he's also got a lot of touch
completely,
as well.
Completely, yeah, completely. And it's also important to point out that he took a big pay cut to go back to Boca.
I don't think he ever wants to play for anyone else.
No, he loves that side, absolutely loves it. And move on to his international career. He won the South American Youth Championship in the FIFA Under 20 World Cup in 97 with Jose Pekerman, but didn't play in the 98 or 2002 World Cups. Pekerman in 2006 was in charge of the Argentine side, and he built the whole team around him. And this was more so evident in the quarter final against Germany when they were 1-0 up and looking pretty comfortable, and he took him off.
He didn't have his best game, to be honest. He got dragged in there, I remember. But he
took Riquelme off the pitch, and everyone thought, "What's he doing that for?" And they went out.
And lost their shape.
They completely.
That was a crazy move. Considering he had Messi on the bench as well, didn't he? But he went for a really sort of like, let's try and shut out Germany in their own backyard.
Stupid, man. Stupid, isn't it?
Learn from history.
Exactly. It's never going to happen. I think you know, Riquelme is. I mean, you're probably going to come onto this, but his retirement from the national team is absolutely unbelievable.
We'll mention that in a bit. He retired. The first time he retired from the international side was after the 2006 World Cup, saying that the press and public had negatively affected his mother's health. Again, people say it's perhaps because of the criticism. You know, they didn't win and they blamed him.
He is a complicated character. I don't think he likes... And I would never sort of criticise him because I don't know him and I've never met him, and he's a wonderful player. But he does seem like a precious character. He's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder, you know. And sometimes the best players and the most talented people are a bit like that. I think he's probably used that as a little bit of an excuse.
A bit like yourself.
It's the artistic temperament, isn't it?
I think you're right.
Totally, yeah. 2007 Copa America, again, he was really making that Argentinian team tick. And they were playing fantastic football. And it was a shock that they got hammered in the final by Brazil. But again, just the way he orchestrated the team was just absolutely unbelievable.
He also captained to the Olympics, didn't he?
That's right. He was one of their overage players.
He won the gold medal. He captained them to the Olympic gold medal in China. 2010 World Cup qualification campaign, you know, again, he scored two free kicks against Chile to get them off the winning start. His last game
was against Uruguay in October, wasn't it?
He was scoring goals. He was doing well. But then, unfortunately, last month in March, he quit. You know, he's apparently him and Maradona. He just says that they could not work together and they did not share the same code of ethics.
I think also he doesn't really get on that well with Mascherano and Gago and a couple of the other players.
Well, Maradona came out and said that the heartbeat of his team was Mascherano, didn't he?
Yeah.
And
Mascherano's his captain, isn't he, as well?
Yeah, very much so.
Unusual for a player like Maradona to pick a player like Mascherano.
Well, that's right.
I'm not sure if the player... I don't know if Maradona the player is the same as Maradona the manager. I'm not sure it always works like that.
But although he is crazy. And he probably wants to pick himself.
He probably just picked his name out of a fucking hat.
sounds most like Maradona?
you will be my captain. we must get you a wig.
Eat, my precious.
Yeah.
May I?
Sorry.
giving such importance to Mascherano probably put Riquelme's nose out a bit, because Jorge Valdano, one of the previous international Argentine players, said that Riquelme always needs to be one of the main players, and it's impossible to have him in the team without giving him all the responsibility. You know, Maradona said, well, if he comes back and says sorry, then he'd be happy to have him in his side, you know. But he says, this is Maradona said, all I said to him is I wanted him to play 15 metres further up the pitch, and what have I done to scare him off? If I can't say how I want my players to play, then I'm in the oven.
No.
I'm sure. I assume that's some sort of saying he's got that we're yet to hear about.
I'm sure there's probably more to it than that, really. But I think the thing is with him is it's a bit like he'll say something like, oh, when the team loses, Riquelme loses. Yeah. Riquelme's fault. But at the same time, he sort of almost seems like he needs to be the main part. He needs to be the prom queen.
Well,
he needs to have everyone around him.
Yeah.
And so if he wants it that way, he has to really have it that way. Yeah. You know? And it is a shame, because I'll tell you what, that hammering they got dished out last night, if they could have kept the ball a little bit better, like with someone like Riquelme, they probably would have done a little bit better. So.
Yeah, completely. Well, and in altitude, I mean, slow the game down.
Yeah, definitely.
It's as simple as that, really. Riquelme was given a rapturous reception on his first game back for Boca since quitting the Argentine side, and it's really divided people. The fans were chanting his name and with big banners. And
With banners?
They do it all, Joe. Yeah. They were chanting his name and had banners with his name on.
I think I'd be scared to go and watch a game in the Bombonera, especially the top tier. Have you seen how sheer it is?
Oh, yeah. Oi.
Have you been there?
Done it, haven't I?
Is it really, really steep in the top tier? It looks ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I'm hard. it was quite something.
Yeah, I bet.
I got spat on a few times. Some bloke tried to
piss on us. That's everywhere you go, doesn't it?
So, yeah. Some bloke tried to... It was Boca v Quilmes. Incidentally, it was the game when Gary Lineker went to interview Maradona. Not just interview him, spent a few days with him. Yeah. It was this game that they were at, actually. I was there, and it was Boca v Quilmes. And they stupidly put the away fans above us. Yeah. And there was, and honestly, all sorts of blooming, spitting, horrible things was smacking you. And rocks were getting chucked down and everything. And no security in the stadium. And, some bloke tried to piss on everybody. It was, to be fair, I mean, he must have.
It wasn't Riquelme, though, was it?
No. Well, he wasn't playing there at the time. He pissed for about a good 2-3 minutes. He did well. He stored that up all day.
Let's not sully this profile.
Maybe he'd been drinking all day.
With spurious talk of you. In. Come
do you
on.
Really think a football fan would do that, James? Would they be that silly?
Yeah.
Pete's certainly that silly. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
Well, you know, John Terry, he pisses very
Anyway, back to the profile.
I'm not out talking John Terry in this profile, thank you very much, Peter.
But some fans have turned against Maradona with banners calling him a traitor for comments he made about Riquelme. So again, it's really divided.
Seems like you have to be on one side or the other and these sort of things.
Yeah. But I will end with a quote, as I tend to do, from the great man himself. He said, I'd die to wear the shirt of the national team, but it's going to hurt me to watch the World Cup on television.
No.
I'll tell you what, I hope that his mind has changed.
I'm sure this will be sorted out. As the World Cup draws nearer, I doubt I'll be able to resist it. I'm sure they'll resolve it.
It's so disappointing when something like that happens.
Yeah,
imagine when you're 18, you sort of go... What was the point?
Yeah, exactly.
That? I mean, really.
Well, we had it last week with Brian Clough and Peter Taylor.
Yeah.
And it ended terribly, and it's never a good way to go about things.
But this is...
He could be, he's a player that could be the difference between him winning the World Cup or not. He really is. You
but
know?
This is the reason why I really wanted him in, because I think Maradona will sit up and take note and think...
Hope so.
He's in that Dean Winners Hall of Fame. I'm not even in there.
Yeah, exactly.
So stick that in your... Cuban and smoke
It's not like when Jamie Carragher retired from England and no one really cared.
Because I'm bringing him in now. Riquelme, you're into the Deep Mendes Hall of Fame. Hey, come on,
listen to it up. Diego.
Give it up. Romy. Vamos.
Don't let the tortoise get away.
Yeah, vamos.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of this episode of the Football Ramble. I hope you've enjoyed it. You can get in touch with us. We have an email address, which is podcast@thefootballramble.com. We have a myspace.com/footballramble. We have a group on Facebook. We have a Twitter. We have a Last FM.
All over the internet.
And we have our website, which is thefootballramble.com. We're all over the shop, aren't we?
Not Wikipedia, though. They still won't let us.
No, they won't have us on. Fascist.
We'll see about that, Wikipedia.
Yeah,
you watch.
Egg will be on their faces in the long run, I'm sure.
We'll have the last laugh.
Absolutely. But let's say the last goodbye. Peter.
Goodbye.
James.
Bye.
Luke.
Goodbye.
We're all off to fill the void on the Match of the Day sofa.
Who, Marcus? Us!